Hello there, and welcome along to this Monday Racing Postcast. It is Monday the 11th of October. I'm Maddie Playle, and this week I'm joined by Mark Boylan and Tom Collins to go through a marvellous week of action and also look ahead to Kipco British Champions Day on Saturday. It was Future Champions Day at Newmarket on Saturday. We saw three potential stars for Godolphin, so we're going to talk all about their credentials going forward. And a nice segue into the jump season with Buzz winning the Cesarewitch for Nikki Henderson and Oisin Murphy. And on that, Chepstow hosted their jump season opener, so we'll get the guys' views on that, as well as Brave Man's Games chasing debut on Sunday, as well as some of the Irish actions. So without further ado, let's talk about some of these future champions. Hopefully we'll see them make their mark on the division next year. First up, Inspiral won the Fillies Mile. I feel like this year, perhaps the juvenile fillies haven't been the sort of most highly thought of bunch that we've had in a long time, but this filly seemed to have stamped her authority on the division, Mark. Do you think she's the deserving favourite or deserved to be as short as she is for next year's Classics?
Yeah, I'm a little bit on the fence about her credentials next season. Like, I think the winter is going to be all important for her. Like, connections seem to be speaking as though there is a fair deal of physical improvement to come, or that there is natural progression in her with time. And, you know, I'd like to see it happening, because I think in Tenebrism and Discoveries, there are two very legitimate Guineas fillies there. And I'm not, you know, she didn't meet either of those in the Fillies Mile. Like, you'd have to be impressed by the way she's gone about it. But, you know, this is a funny race down through the years. Like, for all that it does undoubtedly produce very, very good winners, it's a funny time of year for fillies. Sometimes their coats are just beginning to turn. You know, some of them have been on the go longer than others. And I'd have to be very impressed with Inspiral, but I will, you know, get cut a little bit of slack maybe if you have one or two that didn't maybe run up to your full expectations. You know, even as a stat I pulled out for when I was previewing the race on Friday, you know, Aidan O'Brien has won the race 5 times, but, you know, he's beaten horses in the race. I think they've won 21 Group 1s between them in the last 5 years, whereas his 5 winners, they can average maybe 2.6 Group 1s between them, you know, minding 1.7, but the rest were all 1-1-1-3 Group 1s. You know, they're, for me, I'm willing to forgive a run like Concert Hall, maybe just looking like coming to the end of a long season. You know, even the likes of Wild Beauty, Miss Ansen, I still think we're going to see the best of them next season. So I'm not ready to put the crown on top of Inspiral yet, but she deserves to be where she is in the Guineas market.
Yeah, she beat Prosperous Voyage by 3¾ lengths at Doncaster, 2½ lengths this time around. But I guess to counteract what Mark's saying, TC, by Frankel, and she races like there's going to be more to come anyway.
Yeah, she's a big scopey filly, which is obviously what you want with a two-year-old going into a three-year-old season. The last 2 winners of the Fillies Mile before Inspiral both didn't train on. We had Quadrilateral in 2019. She disappointed as a three-year-old. Pretty Gorgeous last year also has disappointed this season. So you'd hope that Inspiral kind of bucks that trend and goes forward to next season with, you know, the promise of winning Classics. What I think is interesting is the fact that Frankie Dettori said that she doesn't like quick ground. Now, you're going to get quick ground probably in the Guineas, aren't you? So that's going to be a worry. Wouldn't want to be taking 3-1 right now, considering. But if there is some rain next May, she's probably the most likely winner of the Guineas at this stage.
Yeah, by Frankel out of a Selkirk mare. So you could certainly understand where he gets that belief from about soft ground. Now, truly, Saturday, moving on from Inspiral, was all about Godolphin. They had Goldspur winning the Zetland Stakes. Then they had Caribus winning the Autumn Stakes. And, of course, Native Trail, their flagship juvenile, capping off an excellent season in the Dewhurst. Quick word on Goldspur, TC. Could well go to the Group 1 Criterium de Saint-Cloud next. What's happening to Coolmore, though? I mean, Godolphin just dominating this division and dominating this season, really.
Yeah, Charlie Appleby and Godolphin have had a remarkable reverse in the success flow in the last few years. It was all Coolmore, Aidan O'Brien between 2015 and 2018, and now it's just been Godolphin for the last couple of years, especially this season, just utter dominance. I don't know whether it's just Aidan O'Brien's horse is not running up to par. I know sometimes he has a lull in the season. Seems to come a bit later this time around. But look, Godolphin horses are just flying. Goldspur, I thought he was very impressive. He raced away from the rail, which I personally think was a notable angle. It might have been slower against the rail, the far side rail in the dip, for example. But he was really gutsy at the end. I think he'll relish the Derby test. I wouldn't rule out Hafit as well, the other Charlie Appleby horse for the Derby next year. He only got going again in the final strides after briefly looking unbalanced in the dip. Unconquerable, he finished second for Donico O'Brien. Clearly the fastest horse in the race, I think. No doubt about that. He was stepping up from a mile to a mile two. He just didn't stay as well as the winner. I thought the first three home were pretty useful though, Maddie.
Okay, so that was the Zetland Stakes. Let's move on to the Autumn Stakes won by Caribus. It was a bit of a disaster last time in the Royal Lodge, but William Buick made no mistake this time, coming from last to first. And the vibes have always been very, very strong about this horse, but how does he compare to his stablemate Native Trail, who won the Dewhurst? I did a poll over the weekend and 52.1% went for Native Trail, 47.9% went for Caribus. So it's very close indeed. Who do you think has the upper hand at the minute, Mark?
Right now, I'm with Native Trail. And I think the case for Caribus, I personally feel that a mile is grand for Native Trail. I think Caribus has got loads of boot. Like, the way he travels, I think he's going to be flexible in terms of trip. I don't think he's a one-trick pony next season. But Native Trail, you know, I think the Craven next year, wherever we're going to see these horses come out, maybe have a trial for the guineas, it's going to be so fascinating, because maybe Native Trail is the sort of horse that is just going to be racing behind the bride a little bit, or, you know, I won't say lazy, but just one that isn't going to really take you there. Caribus is like chalk and cheese. It's the exact opposite. He's a really, really strong traveller. Now, I'm willing to say that Native Trail is still learning about the job. That, you know, physically he's got all the tools, but mentally he's still learning. You know, you saw that in the National Stakes. It's a flat spot, and then boom, he really comes home strongly. It's a key part of his race. He's never stronger than when he's at the line. And I wouldn't let that draw you into a false sense of, you know, that this is a horse that needs further. I just think that more maturity is going to bring out more in him again. So from a guinea's point of view, the trials will be absolutely fascinating. If Native Trail is still green and still kind of showing that, you know, off the bridle tendency, and Caribus is such a strong traveller, you know, if Native Trail doesn't sharpen up in that regard, I'd be a Caribus man. But just with the potential of more to come, give me Native Trail for now. So I hope that's not too much of a middling answer for you, Maddie.
Not at all. I totally see where you're coming from. And they are quite different horses in a way, both really imposing physical specimens. But TC, I think you agree with Mark, don't you? You're a big Native Trail fan.
Yeah, I am a big Native Trail fan. I think he's much more likely to win the Guineas next year than Caribus. Now, I know there are certain judges, Paul Keighley included, I'm sure he won't mind me mentioning his name, that think Caribus is the better of the two. I have a pretty strong opinion that Native Trail is. Now, Caribus was very visually impressive in the Autumn Stakes. There is no doubt about that. But he won in the manner that his rating of 111 suggests he should have. William Buick clearly wanted to hold on to him longer than he did last time. Last time out, we saw in the Royal Lodge that he burst clear, had a brilliant acceleration just to scoot clear of Royal Patronage, and then got chinned late. This time, William Buick held on to him for an extra furlong and a half. He didn't ask for any kind of effort until 1.5 furlongs from home. The horse's natural high cruising speed just took him into the race. Saying that, there was only 1.5 furlongs to the line. I still thought he was stopping in the final 100 yards. The final sectional was 12.79 seconds. That's not overly quick. And the winning margin was also reducing at the line. I think he reminds me a lot of Pinatubo. People are going to get on the hype train because he's got such a high cruising speed. He quickens really well. I don't think he's going to be as good at three, especially over a mile, as the likes of Native Trail, who's got so much scope.
Okay, so strong thoughts there from TC. Isn't it odd? Because Native Trail is the one who's by a sprinter in Oasis Dream and out of a very speedy family, whereas Caribus has the more stout pedigree, being by Dubawi and related to some 10 furlong horses, I think. St Mark's Basilica won this race last year. Obviously, we know what he's gone on to do. That's the Dewhurst. How do you think these two match up when we look at recent two-year-olds that we've seen? Are they towards the top of the pile, Tom?
I think Native Trail is. As I say, I think Caribus is virtually Pinatubo by Mark II. He may prove me wrong, and I hope he does, because, you know, he's shown so much this year. But I think Native Trail is the standout for Charlie Appleby, and in the whole division, aside from maybe Luxembourg. Native Trail has just been incredibly impressive in every start. He has size and scope to improve, much like Inspiral does in the Phillies division. When I saw him back at Sandown in July, he filled the eye in the paddock before his debut. And he, again, like we've seen every start, he just took a little bit of riding to get into full gear. Once he finds that full gear, he just moves away. He has an incredible mix of stamina and speed. And I think he's perfectly suited to the 1,000 Guineas test next season. I don't want to be opposing him, though I do think Luxembourg is a very good horse. I think his native trail is right up there with the best juveniles we've seen for looking forward to classics in the last few years. And he beat two horses on Saturday in the Dewhurst in Dubai, Dubai Legend and Bayside Boy, who are pretty good, well above average, I'd say. He made them look ordinary in the closing stages. I'm very high on native trail, not so on Coroebus.
Okay, how do you think the Vertem Futurity is going to impact these two-year-old standings, Mark? Because I'll say it again, but Aidan O'Brien, bar Luxembourg, who I guess maybe they're pinning all their hopes on with Point Lonsdale, his form slightly tailing off, he hasn't seemed to have got much in this division.
Well, I think across the board, I wrote about this in the paper today, I do think that the 2021, you can't get away from the fact that it has been Godolphin's year. And I think it boils down to horsepower. Like, I mean, even next season, I think, although this has been dominant this year, I think next year is going to be, it could even be stronger for Godolphin. You know, I think that was Charlie Appy's 50th Group 1 winner, top level winner at the weekend. You have Adi Arn, Hurricane Lane going to stay in training. Native Trail, Coroebus, you know, there is a lot of depth there. And it's not, there's a lot of divisions they're depth in. And I wouldn't be willing to say that it's a case that Aidan's horses haven't run out of form. I will definitely say that he is acknowledged that at some point, I'm pretty sure that he's acknowledged at some point this year that the two-year-olds maybe went a little bit quiet on him or that they didn't quite fire for him. But I just think the better horses at the moment are in Godolphin hands. But I think the Derby winner is in Ballydoyle. At Luxembourg, and we talk with the Virtue and Maturity, to me, Luxembourg is the Derby winner. I don't think, if there is a Derby winner out there that isn't Luxembourg, I don't think we've seen him yet. You know, it'll have to be something that we haven't. I really, really couldn't have been more impressed by what he did. If you looked at the sectional reviews of what he had done, it compared extremely favourably to even Art Power Sprint on the day. His closing sections were really, really strong. And he just doesn't look the finished article yet either. It's just so exciting. So really, I get the feeling that Luxembourg could be the horse that's just as important to Coolmore next season as St. Mark's Basilica was this season. And, you know, ultimately, the battle between Coolmore and Godolphin, I always find it fascinating. The fact that one begins to get the upper hand over the other will only drive the other to go even stronger again. So as flat racing fans, we're going to be guaranteed an even better product, more competitive stuff. And that's just a win-win. So I'm really, really excited with a view to next season to see how these Godolphin two-year-olds go on, how Adi Arn, Hurricane Lane can progress. It's just really exciting. But Luxembourg, I would be surprised if he doesn't win the Derby. Barron, he goes the wrong direction. We obviously saw at High Definition that Beresford brilliance didn't translate to classic riches, but I really, really love Luxembourg. He's probably my favourite two-year-old this season.
I wouldn't be far behind you with that. I'm a huge fan of his, and I think things could change slightly if we see a big performance from him at Doncaster. Let's move on then to the Together for Racing International Cesarewitch Handicap, which came again on Saturday at Newmarket. Jump trainers, they dominated the entries here. Willie Mullins had several in the market with a strong chance, but the best of those burning victory could only finish second to Nicky Henderson's Buzz, ridden by Usheen Murphy, got the better of the filly in the closing stages. Now, it's been a bit of an up and down week for the champion jockey electing Usheen Murphy. Tom, failed a breathalyzer test, his second on that score. What was your response to that? Some people have differing views on this, but he clearly needs to do better, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, I mean, he shouldn't be, you know, he shouldn't be turning up above the riding limit. But credit to Usheen Murphy. He came out and said he made a mistake. Look, we all know how good he is with the media. He's a brilliant rider. He'll bounce back from this. He won't make the same mistake again.
Okay. And Mark, you got anything else to add to that? Because it's sad, isn't it? I think Kevin Blake said of 16 breathalyzer sort of offences, if you like, two of them now have his name on it. Would you be reading much more into that?
Well, it's not a good statistic. It's not something you want to see. And ultimately, what Usheen Murphy does in his personal time is not something for us to have a great handle on. But when you are in a position that he's in, where he, and I'm so delighted that as an ambassador for the sport, that he is as good a communicator to get racing's message out there in that sense. But if you are embracing that role, you then, things like this just really don't help you. Like, this is, I was more disappointed than anything else, because they're so, like, if I was, from an Irish point of view, sending a horse over to England, Usheen Murphy is absolutely top of my list if I was having a man to ride it. Like, I think he's absolutely world class. Like, he has the Frankie Dettori potential. His big race, you know, what he's shown us in big races has been tremendous, and day-to-day level as well. He's really, really, I can't speak highly for him as a rider, but when things like this happen, it just really, I find it disappointing, because there's guys out there, and we know them up and down the country in England and Ireland, who are working outrageously hard. And Ushie Murphy is working outrageously hard too. But there's guys everywhere that would give their right arm to be in Ushie Murphy's position, getting to ride on Group 1 race days, getting to do this. And for him to allow something that is not specifically a racing-related matter to stop him from doing that on a day like Friday. You know, he didn't get to ride Nissan Sen in the Phillies Mile. You know, it's just disappointing on that level that, you know, that opportunity is there, that he's not able to maybe grab it with both hands on that day. And I have no doubt he'll bounce back. He's an absolutely terrific talent. He's got unbelievable support in terms of connections there. But just when you are embracing that role as an ambassador, it's not a look that I think reflects favourably on anyone, really.
No, and we'll compare perhaps him slightly in the role he has to that of Colin Keane, who, of course, had a fantastic weekend. More of that a little bit later on. But let's give Buzz some credit. He's a really talented horse, clearly well handicapped on the flat. And Nicky Henderson had him fit after 184 days off to strike here for Thurlow Thoroughbreds. Don't forget, he was second in a Grade 1 to Abracadabras at Aintree. Where would you go with him next, Tom, over jumps?
Well, I've been reliably informed where he's going to go this season, but I shouldn't mention just for the targets. But they're going to go, I think, 2.5 miles, then up to 3 miles, which will be interesting later in the year.
They mentioned this is Taylor's hurdle, didn't they? I didn't know whether they were joking or not. Jess Stafford.
Yeah, I don't think she was, but we'll see. It was Heartbreak City for me in the Cesarewitch, Maddie. Just talking about it again gives me shivers. Put up Burning Victory in the RFO column on Tuesday, Weekender column Wednesday, Punt on Saturday. Couple of podcasts, she finished second, and she was miles ahead of the third as well. Yeah, it's a gutting one. I was pretty sweet on her. She looked the winner throughout, I thought, from start to finish. Great ride by William Buick, but no excuses because, you know, she had the dream trip and Buzz was just too strong in the closing stages. Brilliant piece of placing, I have to say, by the Thoroughbreds team. Just exploiting that flat handicap mark of 96, obviously rated far superior to that over jumps. And Ushie Murphy, we've just spoken about him then, but this was his just pure brilliance in the saddle again. So strong in the closing stages. Managed to regather Buzz, who briefly looked beaten, I thought, when they got into a battle. Managed to regather him and hit the front and win the Cesarewitch. So Heartbreak City, but a thrilling race. Probably the best finish we saw all weekend.
It was very enjoyable, wasn't it? And great to see those connections in the winner's enclosure with so much money going towards a good cause. Now, if you want more from the jump season from us, don't go anywhere because we're going to be talking about Chepstow and their return to the jumps just after this.
The jump season is nearly here, and pick up your copy of the Racing Post's brand new pullout, The Big Jump Off, which signals the start of the 2021-22 National Hunt season. Free in the Racing Post on Monday, October 18th. It's got 72 pages of unbeatable content, including anti-post tips, great columnists, divisional analysis, and much more. That's The Big Jump Off in the Racing Post on Monday, October 18th.
So there were 2 days at Chepstow's Return of the Jumps meeting. The feature was on Saturday at 3:30, very nearly clashed with the Cesarewitch. It was the Wasdale Group Silver Trophy Handicap Hurdle, a race that has produced some really smart performers historically. And this time it was won by the very unexposed Orbeez Legend. And I think this could be a trend throughout with the season that we're going to see, Tom, in that Philip Hobbs, after having a bit of a quiet year last year, Tom O'Brien, now his number one, of course, after the retirement of Richard Johnson. I think we could see that some of Philip's horses are really going to look well handicapped. He's hit the ground running, and this horse will be a powerful string to his bow this year. What do you think of that?
I completely agree with you. Philip Hobbs had a couple of down years, hasn't he? But he's got a stack of young horses who, especially novice hurdlers and handicap hurdlers, that are going to do really well this year, I think. I'm just glad that Did They Leave You Out Too, obviously, apologies to Connections for saying this, but didn't win, because this is the horse I backed many times. And that, coupled with the Cesarewitch over the space of about 10 minutes, would have been a disaster. So I'm just glad that Orbeez Legend came out on top. He's only had 5 starts. He's open to plenty of improvement and could be a real nice flagship bearer for the stable this year.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll manage to get Defi Kasoy back to his former glories. Did anything else catch your eye at Chepstow? I thought Of The Magistrato put up a really nice performance on British debut. Would he be an early, not fancy, but would you have any interest in him for a race like the Triumph going forward?
Yeah, you always have to look at these Paul Nichols trained 3-year-olds, don't you? The ones that come from France, Magistrato, drifted quite remarkably in the morning. I think it was available as short as 4 to 11 in places, went off 4 to 7, but very impressive. Just pushed clear. Obviously, it's very early in the jump season to suggest you may be on the Triumph Hurdle winner. I'm sure Paul Nichols himself has got plenty of other decent 3-year-olds to come out. So he was very impressive. I thought T Clipper was really good on Novice Chase debut for Tom Lacey as well, who has a brilliant record with chasers. But yeah, it was a good afternoon. First proper, well, I mean, Friday was, but first proper afternoon of jumps racing and looking forward to the season.
Yeah, we've got Champions Day to come, so not quite fully in jumps mode just yet. What about Brave Man's game at Newton Abbot on Sunday, Mark? That was an awesome chasing debut, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
I really was hoping for some enthusiasm there. I feel like you're not quite as feeling it as much as some of us.
This time of year, I this doesn't really light my fire, to be honest with you. And I do think he was clever. He looked intelligent over his fences. But like how much you can draw, and I think the fact he did it against more experienced horses over fences is a plus. But you know, this is too early for me to be thinking with that in mind. Sorry to be kind of the Cheltenham Grinch in
not
that sense this time of year, but like you know, even you're talking about the horse there, mentioning the word Triumph, I think there's so much more we're going to look at. And the thing that will drive me mad, I wrote about it last year, like we're going to get these price cuts for Cheltenham races everywhere, and you know, the amount of them that actually even get to Cheltenham come March. I just be, you know, ultra cautious in that sense. Don't get me wrong, if something knocks my eye out and I'm absolutely bowled over, fair enough, I'm willing to go and enjoy it. But Brave Man's game, I didn't learn a mad amount about him other than that he can jump pretty well. And but again, that'll be put under more pressure in a better race again. But job done for Sunday.
It's a funny time of year, isn't it? I was doing What's On This Week, our piece yesterday, which sort of tees up, as it says on the tin, what we've got coming up. And although it's Champions Day, I know Quilixios ran on one of the Punchestown cards this time last year. So although you're a bit tepid, Mark, it does pay attention. But obviously the focus has largely been on the flats in Ireland, especially with Colin Keane achieving and beating the all-time record for winners in a season. I feel like he's a man who goes about his business very quietly, but he seems to have the respect of everyone in Ireland and a lot of support behind him. Just tell us a little bit more about Colin Keane, the man, and how he's managed to do what he's done.
He seems ultra straightforward. I can't say that I know him personally in any great level, but in any of my dealings with him, and I think I'd speak for the majority of the press room in this sense, like there just doesn't seem to be anything that would faze him. He doesn't seem to get, you know, grouchy. He doesn't seem to be, it's hard to find whatever vice he has. If he does, he keeps it very well hidden. And as a rider, there's one thing that Shane Lyons, Ger Lyons' brother, who's a key part of that team at Glenburnie as assistant, and you see him racing plenty. One thing he said a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, and it stuck with me since, they never worry, he says, Ger or any of the team, about whatever draw they get in Ireland when you have Colin Keane riding for you. And at the time I was thinking, yeah, okay, you know, whatever. But time and time again, you see him placed out in horrid spots. And, you know, double figure draws. Horses that need to go forward and they break poor. He never, ever panics. And I think his versatility in that sense is one of his standout traits that I would have. He's extremely consistent. And although he hasn't had a huge amount of Group 1 opportunities, you know, he has absolutely delivered when he's been given them. You know, we saw Siskin. I know there was an element of needing to push the door open to get out. But, you know, absolutely ice in his veins when he was able to do it. I think that this guy has all the potential to go and be the next Pat Smullen over here. And I wouldn't say that in, you know, in any sort of bumping up terms without really meaning it. Everybody over here knows how good Colin Keane is. They know, they see it day in, day out. And I think it's only a matter of time before the rest of the world begins to realise it. You know, we saw Tarnawa last year at the Breeders' Cup. You know, put him anywhere in the world. I think you can put him in any draw. And as long as he's on the right horse, you're never going to be too far away. I've savage respect for Colin Keane.
And there was murmurs, wasn't there, a while back that he would become the new number one at Coolmore. He still rides for them. They use a whole range of jockeys. But do you think he almost needs a bigger job to take him to the next level?
I don't know. Like, I mean, Gerard Lyons' profile of his stable has continued to grow year on year. Obviously, if he was in a bad diet position, and I don't know how much, you know, real emphasis there was on that sort of potential. I know there was a, you know, there was a market made at the time where a bookmaker made him favoured or made him a quite a sharp price to join at Ballydoyle at some stage. But I don't really know, I couldn't tell you whether there was really rumblings in that regard. But I think the manner in which he's gone about achieving this, you know, 1-2-6, you know, the sheer quantity of trainers he's ridden for, and it's every sort of horse. It's not, I think the fact he has broke this record, and it's not been a case that he's done so by relying on one stable or whatever it may be. I really think it's ultra impressive. And it could end up being a case that if there's a Saturday in England and, you know, there's a trainer that needs someone for a Group 1 opportunity, I think that sort of role where he's flexible, he obviously rides for Dermot Weld over here as well. That's a great string to have to his bow. I think for the time being, he'd be pretty happy with where he is. But obviously, if the Ballydoyle job came knocking, any rider to turn that down is very difficult. But I have no idea whether that's a realistic thing or not.
And it was a big weekend over in Ireland. Give us an update on what happened domestically for you then, because there were some good performances both on the flat and over jumps.
Yeah, I was at Limerick yesterday, and before I touch on some of the more high-quality stuff, I have to say, the best reception of the weekend, we had two listed races and we had the Munster National at Limerick. The best reception in that parade ring yesterday was when Cruz Linen came back in after winning the race that he would be retired after. At the age of 14, I think it was his 10th win under rules, he won 14 point-to-points. Camilla Sharp was pride and joy. That was absolutely brilliant to see him go out on a high note like that. And just really, really, it was a nice touch the way they did it in terms of everybody knew the second he walked in, that would be his last race, and he was given a brilliant reception to the old boys, so I was delighted. But the Munster National was a good performance among the ropes, trained by Willie Mullins, ridden by Sean O'Keefe. That was Sean's biggest winner in Ireland. He obviously won the Martin Pipe on Gallop and the Champ, but really good performance. Rated 1-4-1, he always kind of had the potential to be a fair bit better than that. You know, he was second to Monkfish in the Beginner's Chase last year, and he hadn't been seen for nearly a year, but he's one now that could take another step up the ladder and looks pretty useful now as long as he stays right. Mrs. Milner wasn't impressive, particularly in the Colleen All and Mayor's Hurdle. It was a race she was entitled to win in ratings, but you just got the sense that really decent ground, and, you know, she'll sharpen up a whole pile for it, but decent ground seems to be vital to her. And I'm not in any way being harsh on her, but, you know, she won getting the job done. But you wouldn't have been overly blown away by her. And just to mention one other race, the Irish Cesaro, which John Kiley, a man, did a feature earlier in the year that was pretty well received, and he was very, very engaging to listen to speak with. And his line out won the Cesaro, which at the Curragh, 18-1, you know, off a nice low weight. But he mentioned that he had planned out the race from a long time, and this was a really, really typical John Kiley long term plan coming to fruition. And Shane Foley, another big winner for him. I think just to touch on Shane Foley just for a second, I know he's been in the headlines for different reasons in terms of interference and whatever with the Matron Stakes. But if Colin Keane wasn't around this year, how good a season would we be talking about? We wouldn't stop talking about Shane Foley in the year he's had. He's ridden out of his skin, and he's had a brilliant end to the campaign. So nice to see him finish up on a good note. But John Kiley, you just can't stop him. Well in his 80s, and he doesn't look a day in that territory at all. And line out, he's not a spring chicken either now. He's 9. But a performance that would warm your heart to watch it.
I must admit as well, I really enjoyed seeing the photos and the video of Tubbs McNally winning his pony race.
Absolutely brilliant. Tubbs a good character too, and you see him on ITV racing from time to time. And he looks to have the talent in the saddle to match his ability to speak.
Let's see how he goes on to do in the future. Be nice tale to follow, that one. So keep your eye out for Tubbs McNally, whether we see him on the pony racing circuit next. We've still got more to come. It's Kipco British Champions Day on Saturday at Ascot. We're going to see hopefully some really big clashes, including in the QE2. I can't wait to get stuck into that just after this. Welcome back to this Monday postcast. It's our final segment, and as promised, we're going to go to Ascot on Saturday for the Champions Day card. The first race is at 1:25. It's the Kipco British Champions Long Distance Cup, a Group 2, so not a Group 1, but could deliver in spades. And we could see yet another clash between Trushan and Stradivarius, who faced each other in the Prix de Cadran when last seen. Stradivarius is going to be kept in the race by John and Thady Gosden. There were some murmurs that it could be his final run when we saw him at Longchamp. But Trushan, he loves the soft ground. Maybe he's not going to get it, though. This could be really fascinating. We've got some young horses in there as well. I'm a big fan of Hamish, the likes of Manobo, who could put it up to the pair as well. What are you thinking this far out on the race, Mark?
I'm actually interested. Yeah, the ground is going to be a key part to this because as we speak, I think the ground is good to soft, soft in places on the straight course, soft, good to soft in places on the round course. But the forecast, you know, we've had a little bit of rain, but it says here dry through to next Saturday, occasional shower Tuesday, Friday. But you'd imagine it's going to quicken up a bit. So usually we're kind of planning for mudlarks here in this scenario. But I think Baron Samedi is one that, you know, while we have a little question mark about where Stradivarius is in the grand scheme of things, and Princess Zoe would obviously prefer it softer again. Trusham would prefer it softer again. I just think Baron Samedi, sometimes it takes these horses to stay in division a few runs to properly put themselves there in a position to win one of these. He was third in the Irish St. Ledger from a bad draw. And I just thought that run really solidified. For all that he's come from a place that wouldn't have inspired you, you know, been rated 65 and racking up a sequence in handicaps, I think he belongs at this level now. And he doesn't mind a cut in the ground. He's won on heavy ground last season, but he's not in any way dependent. He's won on decent ground as well. He's won, you know, Group 3 at Navan on good ground. Give me Baron Samedi for the time being, I think. He'd be the one at the prices that appeal when there's just a little question mark here and there about either conditions or where we lie with some of the contenders.
For sure. Search for a Song also could represent Dermot well. But it's funny, isn't it? Scrolling down here, you see Aidan O'Brien, he's got plenty entered, but you have to go down quite a way to see them. The same, I think, in the sprint. Tom, anyway, who would you be with here, Trusham or Stradivarius, if I had to ask you this far out?
I mean, plenty depends on what the ground conditions will be. I think Trusham is more talented now in their career. Stradivarius has seemed to be a little bit regressive. Obviously, I love Stradivarius. He's one of my favourite horses, but Trusham just kind of has his measure. Depends on what the ground will be. The softer, the better for Trusham, but it looks like the forecast is going to provide good ground for the first time at Champions Day in ages. Another horse in the race that would interest me, obviously no finalised pick just yet, but would be Berkshire Rocco if he ran for Andrew Balding. Only a four-year-old, won just twice, but been really consistent, wasn't far behind Quickthorn in a race that wouldn't have suited last time at Salisbury. This seems to have been the target. He's only had one start in Britain this year since going to Qatar for a listed race at Doha. So keep an eye on Berkshire Rocco, who's also won at the course before.
Yeah, neck second to Galileo Chrome, of course, in last year's St. Ledger. I like that. Seems a very uncharacteristic pick from you. Not uncharismatic.
You're uncharismatic? I don't believe it. Come on this podcast, get insulted.
You'll be hanging up very quickly. You want to be careful.
Oh, it's Monday, you can tell, can't you? Let's move on to the 2 o'clock, the Kipco British Champions Sprint Stakes. And big news in this race is Starman has had an injury. He was the Antipodes favourite for Ed Walker. He's not going to run, so that leaves it a little bit more open. You've got Rohan for David Evans, who was so eye-catching on his last start in Ireland. Go back and watch that race. I implore you to do so. But he's coming up against the likes of Art Power, Dragon Symbol, he's danced every dance this season, Creative Force, Kinross and Minzal, who I thought ran a nice race on his return from absence last time. Who would you be looking towards, Mark? Because it's not a division where you think there's one horse who is much better than the others, especially not now Starman's out of the question.
No, exactly. And I mean, definitely I'm with you in the eye-catching nature of Rohan at the Cora, and we saw that a case of you give that form a fair boost as well in the Abbey. So yeah, I'd have respect for Rohan, but you touched on it there. Minzal, I thought that was a brilliant, brilliant run at Ascot, you know, off a year. And to travel as well as he did, I was waiting for him to cut out on that sort of ground as well. And against a real, you know, race fit, battle hardened, older, 'tis marvellous. I just thought the way he was able to hang in there for long enough on that ground, he could really be belonging at this level, Minzal. He must have had problems that have kept him out for the guts of a year. God, if he's able to, if provided he doesn't, you know, blow up here or bounce on a second start after a long absence, I'd be thinking he can run a very, very big one here. And he doesn't seem dependent in terms of ground. I know that was soft last time and he's ran well, but he's been very effective on good ground too. So with a view to the future, even if it isn't this year, I really am looking forward to what we can see from Minzal if he stays right.
Yeah, the three-year-old for Owen Burrows, you know that trainer is never going to rush his horses. I was quite interested, Antipost in Twilight Spinner for this race, but given the forecast, I think perhaps she might want softer ground. What do you think of the combination of these three-year-olds, Tom, and some of the older horses, the likes of last year's winner, Glenshiel? Where do you stand?
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, isn't it? I think if the ground stayed testing, which it doesn't look like it's going to, then Glenshire would be a big player. He actually caught my eye. I know he disappointed last time out, just a couple of days ago, in fact, on soft ground at this track. But he caught my eye with his final effort. Basically, he led, got past, and then battled back, which is something that you don't usually see from a front runner in any class race. He would have been intriguing if it stayed soft. I think we're all just falling on Minzal, aren't we? I like Owen Burrows' charge. Only had 5 runs, still open to improvement. Mark's basically said everything needs to say about Minzal. But I do think quicker ground is certain to suit. His actions suggest that he'll handle faster conditions than last time.
Yeah, winner on Good to Firm as well by Memas. So hopefully we can see him return to form. The 2:35 is the Kipco British Champions Fillies and Mare's Stakes and some really unexposed progressive horses in here. But we also could see the likes of Snowfall and Love for Aidan O'Brien. He gets a mention here towards the top of the market. But let's talk about Free Wind and La Petite Coco. TC, I'll give you to talk us through Free Wind's chances. So impressive at Doncaster last time.
Yeah, really impressive. Took a huge step forward for Jonathan Thady Godson. She wasn't really a horse at the start of the season. Well, midway through the summer when she finished second in the listed race behind Golden Pass. That actually caught my eye. I thought maybe she's just slightly below average, but she proved last time with that romp when she was step up in distance that she could be a real group one player this season and maybe into next. I'd prefer La Petite Coco for Paddy Toomey. He's a trainer that, I mean, Mark will know a lot more about him than me, but that I think really shrewd, doesn't have too many horses, but always seems to be amongst the winners. And she was really impressive beating Love last time at the Curra. One at a slightly bigger price that's intriguing as well as Invite, Andrew Balding. Really impressive first time up for Andrew Balding at Chester, beating Alunak, who's won around that course before. Didn't seem to handle the track overly well, but still romped home off a mark of 95. Clearly a lot better than listed quality and open to more improvement.
You're hoping for some Andrew Balding multiples then, maybe, on the weekend. Mark, talk us through La Petite Coco then, because she seems like a filly who we just don't know where her ceiling is. She's 1-2-1-1-1 this season, and there's plenty of substance to her form, as TC was mentioning, beating Love last time. How much more is there in the tank?
I love this filly, to be honest. I really, really like her. And the fact that she was able to get up over 10 furlongs in the Blandford, I thought that was just a sign of natural ability getting there and stepping up to a mile and a half. I think it's only going to, or returning to a mile and a half, I should say, I think it's only going to bring up more improvement, you know, and you have that box ticked in the back of your head as well. She was so good on soft ground at Cork earlier in the year. She beat Thunderkiss really, really readily in the Give Thanks. Regardless of conditions, I'm not too concerned. You know, the trip, I think it's absolutely perfect for her. It's just a case for me. I think she's the best filly in the race if we don't get Snowfall here. You know, I'd fancy her to uphold form at Love, but Snowfall is just the unknown. You know, I still wouldn't be ruling her out being absolutely, you know, up there. Even if she ran the Champion Stakes, I'd give her an each-way play, you know, I'd give her an each-way shout. But we don't know where she's going to run. She's left in both of those races, Snowfall. If Snowfall doesn't run, I think this is La Petite Coco's to lose. Not just being Irish bias here by any means. I don't mean to come across in that sense at all, because Free Wind is clearly talented. But as Tom has touched on there, Paddy Toomey, strike rate is exceptional. He brings the horses along nicely. You know, he's had a tremendous year this year. I think he knows when to press on and he knows when to stop. And with this filly, I really, really think there's another step for her to come. So, yeah, La Petite Coco, if provided the Snowfall doesn't turn up, I'd be pretty confident about her.
I think that could be one of the most interesting races of the day. Yeah, let's move on to the 3:10 anyway. The Queen Elizabeth II Stakes, sponsored by Kipco, of course. And breaking news, I suppose, not by the time you'll be listening to this, but it's going to be Just Palace Pier v. Baid. No Poetic Flair. His future is undecided, but he won't run again in 2021, which is a real shame because he's just been the hallmark of so many fabulous races this season. But nevertheless, this should be a real top quality matchup. You look at Palace Pier, he's rated 125. He'll carry 9 stone 4 here. Baid will get £3 and he's rated 121. So on ratings, there is not a lot between them. Palace Pier currently the favourite at around 15-8 ahead of Baid 2-1. I'd be more in the Baid camp, I think. What do you think, Mark? And don't forget the Revenants in their last year's winner as well, who beat Palace Peel, admittedly when he had excuses in this race 12 months ago.
Very much so. And the Revenant, I suppose, they'll be wanting more rain to come than maybe is just forecast. It's a really, really fascinating race. I was planning on, before we had seen the confirmations today, I was really looking forward to seeing Poetic Flair have a crack at these, because I think his style of racing, you know, maybe he didn't know what to do with himself because he was off for 5 weeks since his last run, which is... he's usually running three or four more times, it feels like, it between those gaps, and he just takes it incredibly well. But Baid, in terms of natural, you know, talent, I think that he might just have a little bit more than Palace Pier. And, you know, Palace Pier has been winning races without having to maybe go through every gear that he has. You know, he's not particularly flashy in that sense all the time. And I just think Baid is the sort of horse that could rumble him if he got a right pace to run at. At the prices, Matty, you might think I'm mad here, but Master of the Seas, I thought that was a very satisfactory comeback against Ben Battle. And, you know, Ben Battle, had obviously, fitness wasn't a problem for him after coming back previously. You know, he's got within a short head of Poetic Flair in the Guineas. He's clearly very, very well regarded. I just think at a double figure price, I'd nearly rather back him each way and, you know, have the intent. I think he'll be in the three. I do think that he is the one that can keep closest to Baid and Palace Pier. And if one of them doesn't happen to fire at the end of their season, this guy is coming in here relatively fresh off the back of just one run, missed all the summer with a setback. You know, at the prices, he'd be pretty tempting to me each way. And if the gun was to my head on whether I think Baid or Palace Pier might come out on top, I'd probably just say Baid.
Okay. Bit of a dark horse then, Master of the Seas, of course, short head second to Poetic Flair in the 2000 Guineas earlier on this season. I must admit, just looking back through Baid's form, the Moulin hasn't worked out really well, has it? Order of Australia, so disappointing at Keeneland. TC will know more about that. And Snow Lantern, again, bitterly disappointing last in the Sun Chariot. We'll hopefully see more from him this weekend. Tom, whose camp would you be in?
100% Palace Pier. No shadow of a doubt. I think he's the better horse of the two. I think he's going to be the better price of the two. Even if he's a favourite, I still think he's a better price because Baid's priced up on potential rather than proven form. As you say, Baid's form just hasn't worked out. None of his races. He's been really impressive, don't get me wrong, visually impressive, and he's clearly got plenty of ability, high cruising speed, saves the mile well, etc., etc., what you need to be a champion, but he hasn't beaten anything. Order of Australia was very disappointing and can be in and out. El Drama, who he beat at Goodwood's, below par, you'd say. And looking back to his novice form, I mean, he's beaten a couple of subsequent winners, but nothing that really stands out. Palace Pier's the champion of the division. Won 9 from 10, suffered sole defeat in this race last year, but as you mentioned earlier, lost front shoe, seemed to be running on a flat tyre, basically, in the closing stages. Can definitely excuse him that effort. And his other 9 races have been ridiculously impressive victories, even last time when he beat Poetic Flair, still pretty impressive with the way he travelled. So I think Baid has plenty to prove. He may well go and win, but I prefer Palace Pier.
Okay, confidence then behind John and Thady Gosden's older horse. Let's move on to the 350, the Kipco Champion Stakes, of course, the highlight of the meeting. And Mishriff is going to take on Adiar, the surprise package perhaps that he's been kept in the race after finishing fourth in the arc. Last year's winner, Adabe, he also gives some strength to this race. Aidan O'Brien's got Snowfall and Love in there, as well as Bolshoi Ballet. And let's not forget, William Haggis has made the decision to supplement Dubai Honor, last seen winning the Prix Dollar at Longchamp. He could be a real player in this, as well as Sealyway, who was last seen also running in the arc when fifth. He's a relatively fresh horse too. Who would you be most interested in at this stage, Mark?
I'm a huge Mishra fan. I have been for quite a while. And although there are elements of his form that you would look at perhaps, and, you know, for example, the Judmaid International, I'm not saying he's absolutely 6 lengths superior to everything there. I know he won really impressively. I would have rather nearly if he had, unless if he wasn't pushed out as he was. I still think that in terms of just a worldwide talent, I think there's very few that can match Mishriff. And part of my confidence behind him here is that I don't like the move to run Adiar so quickly after the arc. Like, the arc was run on very testing ground. We all know at this stage, God, there's been enough talk about moving the race, not moving the race since. He raced keenly. He was handy throughout. It's not like he had a quiet race. And even in his performance, I know you can look back at the form and say he's beaten Mishriff in the King George. fair enough. But Mishriff is a 10 furlong horse, not a 12 furlong horse in my eyes. You know, if Adyar is at his absolute best, I think it's very interesting. But I don't think Adyar would probably be at his absolute best. And you know, ultimately, John Gosden has singled out this race from a long way out. And, you know, for all I was taking on Palace Pier, I have massive respect for John Gosden when he circles the calendar and says, that's the race I'm targeting and we're going for it. And it's the very same as he did with York. From back in when this horse was running in the Middle East in the spring, he was on about, you know, it was definitely mentioned in conversation at some point, the Jumbo International. And you can see the gradual step up from Sandown to Ascot. He's resisted the temptation to take on a small field in the Irish Champion. And absolutely, you know, it would have been an incredible win for his stud value if he did beat St. Mark Basilica. But he's already an unbelievable asset in terms of value with the dirt side of things, the turf side of things. I just can't wait to see him again. And provided he's at his very best once more, I think he'd have too much for these. It gives Snowfall an each way shout, but as you can probably tell from my enthusiasm, I'm a huge Mishra fan.
That's fair enough. But what about last year's run in the race, though? Only eighth. Would you put that down to the ground? Hopefully he's going to obviously get the surface he wants this time around.
Ground, and I'm not too sure if John Gosden's horse is all fired in that card last year. You know, Palace Pier as well. I know you can. There's other factors involved there, but I don't think that all of his horses on that day, and maybe a little bit on around that period, you know, I felt coming away from that card when I was doing a bit of dissecting of it that I was willing to maybe draw a line through both kind of the end of a season. He was three, he's stronger now, he's four. You know, this is a hardy, hardy horse. I wouldn't have concerns about that. And, you know, he handles Ascot as well. So I wouldn't be too concerned, to be honest, Paddy.
Okay, we'll give Tom the casting vote. I'm really quite interested in Dubai Honor, but he does need to improve to compete at this level. And this looks like it could be a really strong addition if they all stand their ground, Tom.
Yeah, I have no strong opinion at this stage, purely because I want to see that final field to see that they all are all going to stand their ground. I think pace could be quite crucial as well in this race. Adyar obviously received a lot more weight in the King George from Mishriff than he's going to receive at Ascot and Champions Day in the Champion Stakes. It's going to be an interesting matchup. I love Adyar as a horse. I thought he travelled through the arc really well. Obviously, would have been favoured by a lead that day, but he produced a whopping sectional to quick and clear, and then obviously got chinned late. The ground wasn't to suit. If he runs and he's firing, then I'd probably back him to defy the weight turnaround with Mishriff, but at this stage, I want to see the final field before I come down on a conclusion.
Okay, no mention there for Adabe, last year's winner. Maybe he's gone slightly under the radar this time around. Last seen finishing second to St. Mark's Basilica in the Eclipse, of course. Now, it's been a bit of a blockbuster podcast, this, but we can't let you go before we get this week's naps.
This will not be beaten.
Dramatic pause for the jingle there. Tom, where are you looking this week? You going stateside or close to home?
I'm not. I'm going closer to home. I haven't got through to the stateside racing just yet. It starts on Wednesday, not final fields. Going to look towards Leicester on Tuesday. A horse called Tomfrey for Rafe Beckett. Now, there are two Rafe Beckett horses I'm really interested in watching this week that I've seen so far in the decks. Tomfrey's one, 350 Leicester Tuesday. The other is Signature at Kempton on Wednesday night, first time starter. Rafe Beckett just has this knack of getting his horses ready in October. I don't know what it is. Maybe he has a selection of winter horses, or it's horses that just benefit from the summer to basically mature physically and mentally. But Tomfrey is one who relishes softer ground. He was really impressive at the back end of last year, recording a hat trick. The first of those victories came at Leicester on the 13th of October in this race. I think he's going to back up. He's backed down to a mark of 102, and he ran really quite takingly last time at Ascot, went fifth in a good handicap won by Aldari, who's probably going to be running in the Balmoral on Champions Day. So he would be the nap. I think he's going to be around 9-2. But watch out for Signature on Wednesday night. Not quite sure of the time of the race, but it's in a novice race at Kempton. I think he could be a quite useful horse going forward for Rafe Beckett.
Okay, and Mark, over to you.
If Snowfall runs in the Fillies and Mares race at Ascot, I go with Mishriff. And if Snowfall doesn't run, give me Lapetit Coco.
Nicely done there. Some brilliant action, isn't it? Great time of year with the jumps coming along, but the flat season as well yet to bow out fully. Hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to rate, review and subscribe. As always, we'll see you again in a week's time.